there's something strange in your neighborhood, who are you going to call?
911.
It's time to ham up.
Now I gotta really try it hard.
Shut it down!
Somehow it's the best.
After the credits.
A Yum Chunks podcast.
Yum Chunks! Some say the world will end in fire. Some say in ice. From what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire. But if it had to perish twice, I think I know enough of hate to say that for destruction, ice is also great and would suffice. When Robert Frost wrote these words in 1923, he had to settle with the inferior artistic medium of poetry to express his vision. Now, over 100 years later, mankind has finally found a way to make his true and original artistic vision a reality. On today's episode of After the Credits, a Yum Chunks podcast, we will be discussing the latest cinema, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. With me today to discuss this is Sean Davis.
Why, thank you, Ryan. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I also have Matt Chewy.
Yes, here I am, and I can't wait to dive right into this topic.
Well, great. I really want to thank you both for being with me here this evening to discuss this. I will be your host, Ryan Davis. Before we dive deep into this film, why don't we first share what we've been up to, what we're you know, what poetry and artistic endeavors we've been engaging in the form of our Chunk Fire segment. Matt Shuey, would you like to go first?
Well, sure. Yes, thank you. And thank you for that lovely intro. I don't know how long I can keep this up.
No, it's fine. That was more than I had planned.
Like, can I keep this going? I'm sorry for the one ruining it. Okay, well.
Someone had to. You're a hero.
Yeah. You freed us all.
Oh, are we done then? Bye, everyone. Okay. So it's been a little while since I've got to share any chunks, I think. Has it been?
Yeah, because we didn't really do one for our chunkies, and you weren't on the team too, so you haven't had,
No, we didn't. Right. We didn't do, but you know, the way that we formatted that, we kind of, the whole episode was sort of a chunk fire, which is fine. Let's see, recently I've been pretty busy. So, you know, I'm seeing movies here and there and whatnot. Ryan, you and I'm sorry if I'm stealing one of your chunks, but we wanted to go see a movie called Stop Motion a couple weeks ago. It is a horror movie about a woman and her mother who make stop motion animations in their attic. And basically, throughout the course of the movie, this woman is going crazy, and it becomes very violent and very graphic and just psychological horror. And it was very upsetting to watch. However, watching it with Ryan, as always, is a joy to watch horror movies or romantic comedies, because Ryan reacts the exact same way.
It's true.
Lots of squirming in your seat, lots of jumping out of your chair, lots of funny noises. It's fantastic. You're a great company to watch movies with. But yeah, very dark, very twisted. You know, I've seen a lot of horror movies in my day. Another one that I saw recently was Imaginary, which I keep forgetting the name of because Maeve and I have just been calling it Baddington Bear. Because he's a bad bear. And that movie, for the most part, is pretty cookie cutter, except for the last act of it or so. Last act of Baddington was pretty good. But it was nice watching stop motion because it was, refreshing and weird and very, very, very graphic. So not for the weak stomach, but I would say that that's a recommend. It's a slow burn. It does pick up as it goes. And now for something completely different. Maeve and I started and are almost finished watching through the entirety of the series, Frasier.
Ooh, to get caught up for the reboot or the whatever.
Well, we actually watched the sequel first. So Frasier always seemed like one of those shows growing up that just seemed super awful and boring. Maeve, growing up, she thought the same thing as a kid, but then she got into The Simpsons, and her favorite character was Sideshow Bob. And then so when she got a little bit older, she's just like, oh, this guy, Frasier, is also Sideshow Bob, so I'm going to watch it. And so she was really into it growing up and convinced me that I should watch it. And surprisingly, very, very funny. It's been a while since I've watched a classic style sitcom with, you know, the laugh track and everything. I mean, I think it's a studio audience, but, you know. So she wanted to watch the reboot because it was only a few episodes long. So I watched it with her. And then I think she attended one of the filmings of one of the episodes.
Cool.
I was like, okay, all right, fine. Let's go back and watch it. It's 11 seasons. We're halfway through season 10. So, what a just random thing that we're doing, and what a joy. I'm enjoying it quite a bit. I haven't really been indulging in too much recently because, it is basically the spring now, and like every year, my life is eclipsed by our school's spring musical. And this year we are doing SpongeBob SquarePants, the musical. And it's quite the show. It's a very large, big show. Lots of special effects, lots of colorful costumes and props. So it's a big project. So haven't really had much recreation time, but I'm having a good time. So that's that. Ryan,
cool.
Pass it back to you. Tell us what you've been up to.
All right.
Real quick, when Maeve was in the studio audience, was there a guy yelling that TK Jewelers is a scam?
I'm sorry.
And that's when he was riding in the limo that someone kept pushing up against the wall?
Yeah. And did her and a watch exploded on her date?
And 1,000 springs flew out into her soup?
Sorry to hijack that. Just made me think of that.
Well, the unfortunate thing is that when you started whatever bit this was... A wire kinked in my headphones, and I missed the first couple lines there.
Oh.
So I'm just gonna trust that it was very funny.
That's for the best.
Okay.
Speaking of funny, to reduce the horribleness that is my life, I've been trying to watch some comedies, and they recently put on that show Girls 5 Eva. Netflix,
yeah.
Which was originally on Peacock, I believe.
Yeah, I remember or NBC. Watching it. I was really into it.
Yeah, and at first it'll be a little cringy because, you know, you kind of got to get these things rolling. But then you're realizing, like, wait a minute, this is funny? And then you realize, oh, wait, this is, like, basically Tina Fey-style comedy. And she is, like, a producer on it or something. But... it's pretty good. It's got some, you know, just like 30 Rock has some of those great lines that are just like you have to stop and think about like what they just said for a second. Yeah, has some great moments like that. That has been, it's been enjoyable. And then I watched this movie, I'm not sure why I watched it. Matt, I think I already told you about this, but Ricky Stenicki has Zac Efron and John
There's
Cena.
There's a billboard outside my apartment, like right down the block from my apartment, that I look at every freaking day. And I don't know if I want to punch everyone in that movie, in that poster, or like, well, maybe I'll go watch it.
Well, that's funny because, yeah, go ahead, Matt.
What I was telling Ryan is that, you know, Maeve and I have one of those Amazon smart TVs, one of the Fire TVs. And the main menu that has all the buttons to click on what streaming app you want, the top half of that menu is just ad space. They're just pumping ads directly into our living room. And for the last couple weeks, it's just only been Ricky Stenicki. It's just nothing. Ricky nonstop, all Ricky all the time. I don't know, maybe Sean, if you relate to this, but that being, you know, non-consensually on our TV all the time kind of makes me hate it, even though I know nothing about it.
I totally empathize with that. Also, is it pronounced Stenicki or Stanicki? Because Stenicki. That was also something is okay.
Well, I mean, it rhymes with Ricky. Sean, I think you could use context clues in this situation.
I kind of thought, Ricky Stanicki, there's a rhythm to that too.
No, there isn't.
Well, Sean, if you see the movie, you'll realize how correct Matt is. God.
Oh, dang. Now but I actually,
I can't, I will not deny either of yours, like, gripes and say, no, give it a chance. I will not pretend to do that. if you have any kind of bias towards this movie, it is not good enough to sway that. But I had no exposure to this movie prior to literally playing it, because it was like on some I don't know what I watched it on Amazon. I don't even know. And it was free and it was there. So I said, okay. The little banner was like, it's a rated R comedy. And I was like, wow, I haven't done that in a while. Let's try. That's kind of what, so it seems like they spent quite a bit of money just doing marketing on this movie then. Like, I don't know. It's barely rated R. I mean, there's some, like, I guess language stuff, but I don't think there's any violence or nudity anyway. Maybe there is. I don't remember. It was fun. Oh, that's as much as I'll say. I appreciated it for existing.
Wait, now I'm looking it up right now, and on the one hand, 47% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, that sounds right.
On the other hand, I had never seen the cast. Zac Efron, John Cena, William H. Macy. There's some good names in here. So
yeah. I like all those people.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you.
There you go.
Your offering.
Sean. Those are my offerings, Sean. What are your offerings?
It. Okay, cool. I got a couple things. Even though I haven't finished Final Fantasy VII Rebirth yet, I can't. I had to get a palate cleanser and, you know, get some other flavors. So I got this game, Unicorn Overlord. It's a lot harder to say than it sounds, or you think it is. It was getting a lot of good reviews, so I picked it up. It's fun. It's like a strategy tactics game. In the grand tradition of things like Final Fantasy Tactics or Ogre Battle, but it has a little bit more of a real-time element to it. So games like Warcraft or Starcraft or I don't know, you know.
So the overworld is in real-time? Is that what you're saying?
Like, well, when you get into battles, it's a real-time battle. It's not turn-based, and you're moving your little squads to go actually fight people. Like, and it auto battles when they fight. You don't control individual units.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it's actually kind of cool. It actually has a gambit system like Final Fantasy XII. I know I'm narrowing our audience a lot with every subsequent word I say, but
yeah, I've already checked out.
It may just be the audience of me and Ryan at this point, but basically where you set up tactics so then it auto battles whenever your unit runs into another enemy unit.
Actually sounds super cool.
I'll next time I hang out or something, I'll bring it down and you check it out, because it's actually really addictive. It's pretty fun. I'm not super far, but I've played it considerably enough that I'm getting the, you know, I feel I've explored all the systems. And there's like a ton of like in Fire Emblem, where you get different classes and you can promote those classes and you talk to new characters and you could get them to join and all that kind of stuff in a very, very tropey fantasy setting. But really, it's about the battles and the tact in the gameplay, which is really fun. So far, I'm enjoying it. It's a nice little, like I said, reprieve from Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, even though they're both, you know, RPGs and stuff. They're different enough that it feels different. That's cool. Fun. And then also two books that I just finished reading. One I finished a while ago, but I wanted to bring it up because we never talked about it and it's worth talking about. But one I just finished reading called The Ocean at the End of the Lane, which is a Neil Gaiman book. I don't know if either of you have read this.
I'm aware of it. I have not read it.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Gaiman. Everything I've read of him and generally really, really like. I read a lot of his big stuff. This one was a little bit shorter, and I was like, I'll pick it up. You could probably read it. You could probably honestly read it afternoon if you have nothing else going on, but you could read it over a couple days. It's just lovely. I really, every time I open a Gaiman book, I always, you know, fall back in love with his style of writing. It's so whimsical and dark. It's like, you know, everything's like a fairy tale that doesn't get dumbed down for children, that's fully mature, but also not indulgent and gratuitous. It reminds me a lot of Coraline, both in terms of the content of what is going on in the story. It's both tragically sad and just like poignantly like, I mean, I don't want to say spoilers, but the first, like, it opens with just like the most heartbreaking thing happening. But it's all done in such a, like, a, yeah, whimsical fairy tale kind of way it's told, and, you know, creatures and forces, and just like a kid caught up and just like living his life, and how a kid interacts with the world. Anyway, so definitely recommend that. And then the next book I wanted to mention, which was actually a gift that Ryan gave me for Christmas, and I actually finished it a while ago, but hey, we haven't had a chance to talk about it. I don't even know if I've talked about it much with Ryan since I finished it, but that book is called A City on Mars. It's a nonfiction book. It's a book that is speculative about how would we colonize Mars or the moon or space, and, you know, the resurgence of this people moving, you know, billionaires and the space race and tech moving to the stars. And it's these two, Zach and Helen, I don't know, they're husband and wife, they're really nerdy people that write this book. It's really funny, but it's also awesome and depressing is not the right word, although it is a little depressing, but it's also just like a reality check of like, we are not going to space anytime soon. All the propaganda of like, oh, we're gonna go to the Mars in our lifetime and stuff like that. If we do that, it's gonna be a tragedy. It's gonna be awful. It's gonna be the worst thing that could happen. And this is coming from someone who loves sci-fi and wants to go to space and all this stuff. And same as the authors, they're coming from this, like, they're not trying to be like wet blankets, although they come across that way a lot and they're really aware of that. But it's just like a realistic spin of like, okay, why would we go to space? First off, you know, resources. There's no resources in space. There's nothing. There's like nothing. Like,
yeah.
What do you mean resources? There's nothing. It's nothing. There's nothing out there. And even if there was, the amount of resources we would need to create vehicles and things to harvest those resources far outpaces any resources we would gain from those things. And the risk involved, the pure just inhumanity, the pure like amoral decisions of just like the neglect of human life that would have to happen in order for us to actually do anything substantial in space in the near future is really funny. And like a lot of these nonfiction books, it ends on a hopeful kind of like, you know, look, it's not all bad. We're not saying everything sucks, but like, hey, let's think about this a little bit before we just like make billionaires go off into Mars and they turn everything into a horrible, you know, hellscape of drone workers that live in awful conditions for the benefit of no one, really. So anyways, City on Mars, recommend it. I know I've talked about it a handful of times with various people, but that was a gift from Ryan. Thank you for giving that to me. It was an awesome book.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked it.
Anyways, those are my chunks, though.
Well, cool. Well, thanks all for sharing those chunks. Let's get into Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Matt, would you like to offer us a summary of the film?
Oh, boy, it's been a little while since I've done this. Also, since I've talked about a movie, so we'll see how this goes. Okay, Ghostbusters, the Frozen Empire. This movie takes place a few years after the previous Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters Afterlife, which introduced a bunch of new characters. We've got the daughter of Egon Spengler, who's a grown woman, and she has two kids of her own, and they are named Girl and Boy.
Phoebe and someone.
Yes. Yes.
Finn.
Finn Wolfhard.
Trevor and Phoebe.
Trevor, right? There you go.
And also, we met their teacher in the last movie, Mr. Gruberson, which is the most Paul Rudd sounding name anybody could come up with. He's played by Paul Rudd.
It sounds like something that Paul Rudd's character from I Love You Man would have come up with on the fly when he was trying to think of something funny.
Absolutely. Which makes me think that Paul Rudd said, can this be my character's name? Anyway, so after the events of the first movie, they've all moved to New York and they're now living in the classic Ghostbusters firehouse, and they set up shop there, and they're ghostbusting, and they're ghostbusting around. But meanwhile, they've also become pretty friendly with several of the original Ghostbusters. So they're having a grand old time catching ghosts and chasing sewer dragons and whatever, and then, you know, they have a ghost-busting adventure that causes a bunch of collateral damage, and the city's mad, and Phoebe, who's the most passionate of the Ghostbusters team, is suspended because she's not old enough to be a Ghostbuster. So she's real upset about that, and she befriends a ghost. She's being angsty because she's a preteen, and she's being angsty going around New York City, going around to the park, the Central Park, if you will, and meets another teenage girl ghost who died in a fire, and they play chess and they become friends. Meanwhile, it is revealed that there is another Ghostbusters facility that was set up by the OG Ghostbusters. It's a big old laboratory where they're experimenting with how to take spirits and ghosts out of supernatural objects. Meanwhile, Ray Stantz and his now sidekick, his name is Podcast, hate that, they are hanging out in the cursed object store that Ray has been running since Ghostbusters 2, and Kumail Nanjiani, Kumail Nanjiani, he plays a character named, help me out, Nadim Razmati. Nadim, okay. Damn. He brings in this ghost sphere, an orb. He brings an orb in for Ray to ponder, and he says, this is maybe something. And so Ray buys it, and they try to take it to the lab to extract whatever spirit might be in there, and nothing comes out. So they leave it there, and yeah. So now that it's here, like, there's frost and ice that are just kind of frosting and icing around. And, you know, the Ghostbusters are dealing with bureaucracy, and they're researching this thing. Meanwhile, Phoebe is getting closer to this ghost girl, but she maybe has ulterior motives. We don't know. At some point, Phoebe decides that everybody hates her and she hates everybody. So she's going to go to the ghost lab and try to extract her own spirit from her body. I can't remember why. Because she wants to be a ghost so that she can, I guess, hug Melody, the girl's girl, or something. Hold her hand or something. It's not really clear, but they can't touch each other, and they want to be able to hold hands for
her. She wants to look blue. She wants to be
blue. She wants to look blue. Okay, but once she becomes a ghost, she's able to be taken over by the ghost god demon man who is manipulating Melody and causes Phoebe to be possessed temporarily so that her human body can recite an ancient incantation, which then allows the orb to open up and the scary ghost horny demon man, horny as in he's got big horns, comes out and is now like, I'm a bad guy and I'm gonna freeze everyone to death, which is what he is gonna do. But also at the same time, we find out that Nadim is the Fire Lord, because at some point one of the Ghostbusters scans him with one of those little machines that's in every Ghostbusters movie. You know what I'm talking about. The little wand. Yeah, it's got little
EKG? No.
PKG meter, yeah. And he's like, whoa, Kumail, are you a ghost too? And he's like, there's something supernatural going on with him. Turns out the reason why he had the orb in the first place is because he's the descendant of past Fire Lords who have been tasked with keeping this orb hidden and protected and secret. And he didn't know that because his mom or grandma died before they could tell her. And so that's what he is. So they're like, oh, shoot, you need to be able to help us fight. Also, there's something about how the room that was hidden that was holding that orb is made of brass? I think.
Yeah.
Okay, and so they're like, okay.
Or copper.
Copper, okay, it's one of those. So let's just pretend it's copper. So they're like, oh, shoot, Mr. Scary Demon Monster is weak against copper, so we need to have the Fire Lord shoot him with fire, and then we have to put copper inside of our plasma packs so that we can shoot him with copper plasma. And then they do. And then he dies. And then the mayor from the first movie, who is there for some reason to create a plot cul-de-sac, is like, okay, Ghostbusters are good again, or he gets fired. I don't know. He gets his.
Well, he is the mayor now. He used to be the EPA guy, right, but now he's the mayor.
Right. So he does the whole same thing he does in the original movie to no end. And then everything's cool, and Melody is sorry, and then she gets to go to heaven or join her family. Maybe hell. We don't know. and then the Ghostbusters get to Ghostbust again, and also Slimer's there. And that was the movie. So I now ask what were to kick off our conversation, I'd ask what our initial impressions of this movie were after the movie was over, after the credits, if you will. Let's hear from Sean. What did you think of this movie initially?
Slimer was there.
He sure was.
I mean, this I have no opinions ever. I cancel all my opinions because of this movie. I kill all my opinions. It was bad and stupid, but it wasn't without its charm entirely. There were things that characters I liked, small things here and there. I had a couple chuckles. I will say I think I liked it more than Afterlife, though I think in general Afterlife had higher highs, but I think it also had lower lows, which made me dislike it a lot more in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. This, I think they did things better than Afterlife, which we'll get into our discussion. But overall, I liked how they enmeshed the legacy characters better with this. As I got near the end of the movie, and I was just like, and they're all standing in the dumb firehouse with their proto packs or whatever, and there's an army of Ghostbusters that I don't even know, or I cannot help but think of Jurassic World Dominion and the exact parallels with that movie, and how there's like 90 characters that everyone's here. It's not as bad as Jurassic World Dominion, at least I don't think it's that bad. But it's part and parcel of the same type of thing. It's not worth hating. I don't hate it. There's plenty to pick apart, and criticize, which I think we should, but I can't bring myself to hate it, but I definitely can't bring myself to love it either. So,
okay.
That's my wishy-washy answer. Ryan, what do you think?
I mean, I went in with such low expectations that I think I ended up walking out more positive, feeling more positive than I did the previous one.
Yeah.
So I definitely don't hate it. Since you brought up Dominion, I just feel like this film is more harmless. I don't know, like, whereas Dominion is like bad. It's aggressively bad.
I would agree with that.
I would agree. Yes.
I mean, Dominion is a Jurassic Park movie about locusts. You know, if this was a Ghostbusters movie about, I don't know, volcanoes.
Exactly. Yeah, this was about ghosts.
It's at least about ghosts.
This is not a volcano threatening to destroy New York.
Right.
We're the Ghostbusters. Like, why would you call us?
it was the volcano was in our neighborhood, and it was kind of strange.
Who are you going to call? Someone else entirely. Geologists.
Yeah. But we'll put that on the movie poster. At least it's about ghosts. I mean, that's kind of how I feel. We'll get into specifics, but I don't hate it. It don't like it really either. But
who are you gonna call? Someone else should have been the tagline for the 2016 Lady Ghostbusters movie.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been kind of good.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I am more in line with Ryan's take on the movie. I guess I'll have to say, that's what I told Ryan walking out, that of the modern Ghostbusters movies, so this, Afterlife, and Lady Ghostbusters, I liked this one the most. I would agree with that. Is the one, and you know, I'm looking at the Rotten Tomatoes, it's the lowest reviewed critically of the entire series. Yeah.
I don't agree with that.
I don't agree with that at all. But I think that, this one gets the I don't want to say the tone, because it doesn't quite nail the tone, but it gets the heart of Ghostbusters closest than any of the other recent two.
Yeah.
You know, partially because you got new and old casts, you've got New York, you got a big crisis, but also it feels like there's just enough new ideas for it to feel like a proper Ghostbuster sequel. You know, and if that's the case, Afterlife serves as just a means to an end to get to this point.
Yeah.
That's okay. I've never really had any desire to revisit Afterlife. Kind of rubbed me the wrong way, but I did like the characters they introduced. And so now I'm here, yeah, and I'm like, oh, okay. I kind of, if this was a little snappier, if it was a little funnier, I feel like
that's a big part.
This would have been a worthy Ghostbusters 3, in my opinion. I overall did enjoy it, but like Ryan said, my expectations were super low, so that definitely helps.
Yeah, I don't think I'm that far off from your guys' thoughts. Like I said, I didn't hate it. I just found myself hard to feel anything through a lot of it.
Yeah.
So, but well, like we said, I think one of the things, aside from the legacy character stuff, which we'll get into, one of the things I also enjoyed about this is that it felt like a its own adventure. This is its own thing.
Yes.
It did not rely heavily on nostalgia. Oh, this is what's his name coming back, or this is what some other thing. Like, this is like a monster of the week. It's just in a movie.
Right.
So, I was thinking Monster of the Week is and I kind of like the way that feels. In fact, it reminded me of like the third Abrams Star Trek, where it was like, oh, this is just like a Star Trek episode.
Yes, I agree with that.
And I'm okay with that. I like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't try to prop everything up to be this ultimate, he is going to destroy the world, sure, but...
Yeah, but it feels appropriate scale, just, although there is a giant CGI laser shooting into space, which all movies are contractually obligated to have now.
That's true.
It did fulfill that.
It's fine. feeling like it's its own thing. It had, you know, like as I was saying, there's enough new concepts here. One of the things I really liked, though I think it could have done better, I like that it was a new idea of having a character who's a ghost,
I like that.
Not a weird monster, not a Slimer. Not some type of evil demon like Gozer. It's just a person who's like, hey, I died and I'm a ghost now. And I'm going to talk to you and I'm going to have character things and a backstory and, you know, character arc and all the things that a character would have. I think that's an interesting concept. I do think they could have done more with it. It is something...
Yeah, I agree, but that is... Yeah.
You know, it opens up... It doesn't feel out of place in this universe, and it opens up possibilities in maybe another one where it's like, oh, we need to research this ancient whatever. Oh, but there's a ghost who lives in the library. Let's go talk to her and let's figure this out. They could then play around with this idea some more.
Yeah, I think Matt, is maybe you're saying too, kind of expands the lore just a little bit, where it's like, oh, ghosts can be self-aware and sentient before they're mostly just monsters, right?
Right, yeah.
And I think that's kind of cool. And originally I thought you were talking about Kumail, or the Nadim character, where like, oh, he wasn't a ghost, but he has supernatural powers. Now that's also part of the Ghostbusters lore.
Yeah, I liked that too. You know, when they said, are you the Fire Lord? What is he called?
Fire Master.
Are you the Fire Master? I'm like, okay, that's just like, are you the Key Master? Are you the, whatever. Are you the Gatekeeper? I don't remember. But it did kind of a little bit feel like it was throwing back to that. But at the same time, this is a character who had supernatural abilities passed down to him through the ages and not being possessed by a ghost monster like in the past. So it's still a new idea.
And I know this is maybe reaching and maybe obvious, but I actually kind of did appreciate, like, oh, and at the beginning, the prologue, it's the fire brigade, the firemen, firemasters, right, who capture her or it or whatever, yeah, the being is that puts it in the stasis again for.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, you know, like there's some stuff happening. Yeah. They're doing stuff.
While we're on the topic of things that are new that I liked, I also liked, it's not new, but I guess it's in line with how I felt, like a lot of the references and I guess fan service is a lot more subtle in this one. It's not as in your face. The Rey's curiosity shop, his supernatural shop, in Ghostbusters 2, it's just an act one thing. It's almost like a throwaway or a joke, because the first act of Ghostbusters 2 is just the Woos Brothers. It's let's get the band back together. Where are they now? Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, okay, of course he opened a weird occult shop. Cool. And then we see it again in Afterlife as just a reference. And after the credits, oh, look, yeah, there's his shop. But I like that it's now cemented into Ghostbusters lore, and it's a vital part of the storyline. It makes, you know, everything feel a little bit more connected as a franchise, and you know, it has a place that fits in naturally with the story. I like that too. On the topic of fan service, get those stupid Stay Puffed things out of these movies. I hate them, and I never want to see Stay Puffed again.
I didn't think they were funny in the first one, I don't think. I'm trying to think if I don't remember. Maybe I did. I don't think I did, but maybe. They weren't funny here.
Nope. I blame Minions.
I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, they're the source of pretty much like 90% of the woes in the world.
Yes,
today.
Human, right, grief. Yeah.
We also want to see things as babies. We want to see baby Sonic. We want to see baby Yoda. We want to see everything as baby. We want to see baby Stay Puffs. And we just want to see babies. And when I say we, I mean society. I'm not talking about me. I don't want to. No. I don't ever want to see babies.
Yeah, I agree. The Stay Puffs, they need to be removed.
Aside from them not being funny and just like dumb and wasting time, they literally had nothing to do in the movie. They were there for no reason. You could cut those scenes out, and like, yeah, not that I would expect them to be, you know, super pivotal plot, but usually you integrate them somehow, like in the way Slimer is or something, right? Like,
I mean,
nope, they're just like a gratuitous, like the post credit scene is a nonsensical scene with them driving a truck. Like, I don't care what you, like, what?
Yeah, no, if I remember correctly, in the previous movie, there's ghost happenings or whatever, and stuff is coming to life inside of the grocery store. And that's their excuse to bring back the Stay Puffs, is because they're the little printed logos on the bags of marshmallows. They come to life and turn into little creatures and wreak havoc. That doesn't even make sense within the logic of the last movie. And also, why didn't every other cereal and food mascot come to life? Why didn't it turn into the movie Food Fight? That's what should have happened, if we're going with that logic. But then in this movie, they're like, oh yeah, remember those little beings that came to life that shouldn't have in the last movie we were in? We brought some here.
It almost came across as like that wasn't in the original cut, but they added it in these because the scenes are so removed. It's like, wait, do they know they're in Rey's shop? Does Rey know they're there? Is there like, right, it's like this weird little scene of them screwing around, and then it just cuts to the characters actually doing the movie. It's like, what? Did they know that they were doing that thing? Like, I don't know. It just felt really
some Sony exec dumb. Was like, "Where's the Stay Puff? People want to see Stay Puff." I'm like, I don't want to. Remember Ghostbusters 2? The thing was the walking Statue of Liberty and the slime.
And the pink goo.
Yeah. There's the plenty of stuff when they made the sequel, the first sequel, like, okay, let's do some different things. Stay Puffed was fun because it was weird and unique.
Yeah, it's
love that pink goo.
Oh, I hate that pink goo.
I love that pink goo.
that scared me as a little kid. That was the scariest thing in either Ghostbusters movie. Was the scene where the kid almost gets eaten by the goo in the bathtub. It's still one of the scariest movie scenes to me. I can't watch that scene. It's too frightening.
Yeah. A couple notes on like the nostalgia and fan service stuff. Like, I did actually like that Dan Aykroyd was a character in the movie. Like,
one of my favorite parts. But
yeah, because maybe it's because like my the standard has been lowered so heavily that like all the other Legacy sequels where we bring back Ian Malcolm and Grant and all these characters, so it just feels like so like, oh god. But this one, maybe it's because he's right there right from the beginning and he's just a character. He's leading the effort to do the research, so he feels pivotal to the movie. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side, I thought the way Bill Murray was handled was like more in line with the cringy stuff, right? Like he shows up two times in the movie and both times they do it as like this, oh, look who's here, guys. Like when he shows up the second time, it's like, yeah, we already know he's in the movie. You can't pull it off like it's a big reveal. Like,
and
what
he
are you
takes
doing?
Off sunglasses for no reason.
Yeah, he's indoors at nighttime. I don't, what is going on?
Counterpoint, at least he wasn't sitting the entire movie.
Yes, I agree that it was more on the cynical nostalgia side, but I think because my expectations were so low from Afterlife, it was better than anything I thought in Afterlife. I like the scene where they're interrogating or he's questioning Kamel. Like that scene, I thought was actually pretty good.
I liked it.
It was funny and it was Bill. Like it felt more like Bill Murray acting than in the last five movies I've seen.
Absolutely. I mean, you think of
that's not saying a lot because he is just kind of doing his thing, but it feels like at least he's putting something in his lines more than nothing.
His previous movie that I remember was Ant-Man and the Quantum Town, and he shows up and immediately sits down, and that's his entire role in the movie. And then in the other Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2016, he shows up, immediately sits down, talks for a little while, and then we never see him again. Like, he's just been phoning in everything for so long that this movie felt like he was going for the Oscar, like, by comparison. The fact that he did anything and that he smiled and had any kind of personality made me go, all right, Bill Murray's still got a little bit of gas left in the tank.
Yeah.
Not much.
Yeah, it is funny thinking about his character. He shows up every 2 years to shoot a proton pack, and then he goes back to bed.
Yeah.
I thought that scene with Camille was really good. Like, I felt like maybe he opened up a little bit because they were kind of feeding off each other's like comedic energy.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to think that it was something like that. And yeah, I thought he was really good in the movie. Camille, what that is.
Yeah, he brought a good energy to the movie and. You know, he's just already naturally funny, and I think that his comedic timing fits this movie really well. You know, he seems like the type of character who could have been there all along, and it's good. I wouldn't mind seeing him come back, especially if he's just a dude that has fire powers. Like, I don't know, that's always going to be useful, I feel like.
Yeah, and then he can bend the proton streams and do stuff with them, right?
Yeah.
Like he's a bender, you know?
A totally untapped plot device.
Yeah,
totally untapped.
Cool.
Yeah, it's bending.
I would
love
to see something like that. Like, form the new Ghostbusters, he is in it, Paul Rudd's in it, get rid of all the kids. Who else we got?
Not like the kids.
Okay.
I like the kids, but my biggest problem is the girl is fine. The girl can stay. Like Finn Wolfhard's already not in the movie anyway, so just get rid of him because he's not doing anything anyway. Like I like that actor. I like him. I love him. Stranger Things and whatever. I think he's good. It's just he has nothing to do.
Yeah.
So what is he doing in this movie? Like every time they cut to him, I was like, oh yeah. It to the point where it's the climax. I was like, has anyone told her brother what's going on? And then he's just like there in the scene.
Right.
And I was like,
I guess because
what's happening?
I mean, just story wise, he's her brother. So he's gonna be there, and he also to provide something for her to be jealous of. He gets to be in the team and she doesn't, so that's fine with me. I don't know. He's not.
Look,
you get
to have Trevor or you get to have podcasts. You don't get both.
I'm fine with ditching podcast.
Oh yeah, I agree with that too. I think this just kind of is one of my bigger criticisms of it is that it. As well as the kind of Monster of the Week stuff, which is a good thing overall, and a lot of these characters I do like, I think it's just too... It almost feels like if this was like a four-episode series or something, it would have maybe given more time for these interactions and the relationships to feel more real and interesting. Because, like, there's the moment when they're in Kamel's apartment and... And he like says, oh, and when your brother wants to be an engineer, who's the real break? You know, that whole thing, yeah, which is kind of, you know, chuckly. But then Finn and him connect. It's like, oh, that's kind of funny, but that is nothing. That's an, it's a one, yeah, like, right, right. I wanted, let's like see that relationship.
You could expand
or,
that out.
Or like a whole, yeah, episode, things like
a
that,
whole,
right,
episode that's Phoebe and Melody bonding and learning, sure, more about that, and us learning about the lore and the world more. That would have been good. Yeah, I could see, because there are a good amount of different little plot threads that could have benefited from a little bit more screen time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing too is, you know, with Bill and Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson is back, and I liked his role too, because it wasn't just, like, he actually has like some lab apparently that, yeah, the Ghostbusters have been working on. Like, that was kind of interesting and weird, but I like his role as kind of like, oh, he's funding all of this, yeah, and he's kind of like control, like, oh, that's,
he's
that,
a,
that's
he's a
different
successful
too,
businessman, yeah, and I, yes, like that, exactly, because in the originals he's just there for the money. Like,
yeah, he's
like,
just there for the
this
money,
all,
yeah,
all this is real weird, but whatever, I need a job. That's all it is. And
yes,
he's always, I like that his character now is basically the end result of him being like financially driven and motivated. Like,
yeah,
he's the probably the most level-headed guy in the original lineup.
Right, he's the realist, yeah, amongst them.
And yeah, so now it's, yeah, like, okay, well, of course the level-headed guy is going to become rich and be able to buy the firehouse and build a ghost-busting laboratory, yeah, and all this stuff. It, yeah, it makes sense.
So, yeah, so I like him, and I like the idea of the element introduced, but along with that are, like, three other characters that also, I'm like, there's the British lab guy, there's, like, Finn's, like, love interest from the first one, that she's on
Spider
an
Girl
internship here or something. Yeah, Spider Girl. So, like, it just felt like they have all these characters, which, in and of themselves, I don't dislike any one of these characters, but I want to maybe a little more focus. It's like, you know, a appetizer platter or something. Mm. You try something like, oh, that's good. Can I have more of that? Nope. You get, now you have to try this new one. But no, okay, fine. Like, oh, that new one's good. Can I have more, yeah, of that? Got to try this new one. Like, well, okay, but I want like a little bit more of a substantial arc or, you know, meaningful, yeah, relationships or something that speaks a little bit more to the some of the themes. As it came across, it just kind of felt like scattershot a lot of the time.
I agree, yeah, with you, but I would agree with you, but let me offer this possibility. Because, I mean, if you can't tell, this movie did make me want to see another movie, which the previous one did not.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, when the original Ghostbusters comes out, there's a lot of groundwork that they have to lay. There's a lot of lore that they have to create. There's a lot of characters, because it's an ensemble cast. They have to develop out all these characters. And, you know, I feel like Ghostbusters as a franchise has stumbled around for a long time. And this one basically treats all that stuff as a given, because it is. We know all those things. And then it builds new on top of it. And, mm-hmm, you know, you're saying it's a lot of scattershot and it's a lot of different pieces that you want to spend more time with. Well, yeah. And that's, I think that itself opens us up to more sequels that we can, you know, spend more time,
sure,
in the laboratory, or, you know, we can spend more time with these different concepts that they introduce, because they basically introduced almost as much new lore and concepts as the original Ghostbusters did in the first place. So I feel like that's probably a good thing for it to establish its own identity.
Yeah, I understand that, and I kind of appreciate wanting more is always generally good. Yeah. I don't necessarily just mean lore, though, which I agree there is an element of that where you can, but I just mean like, character stuff, even. Like, there's like two scenes of Finn trying to lure Slimer out with snacks, and it just felt like maybe that was kind of funny. I mean, I didn't really think it was that funny, but I could, you know, maybe it is, that's fine, but it just didn't go anywhere. Like, it just felt like it was just a cutaway, mm-hmm, that had no relevancy,
yeah,
in any way,
right? It never, there's never a payoff, right? Like, if it's a one, you know,
yeah,
one scene, two scene, three scene payoff, like they had the two scenes, but they never go back to Slimer at all. And it was supposed to, yeah, be sort of like a growth for Finn, where he needs to become an adult and he can do things on his own, right? His,
yeah,
mother keeps telling him,
that's what I mean, yeah,
you know, you take care of it on your own. He's like, okay. And then he never does. But I
that's
guess
what I mean.
He,
it just felt like, yeah, they did a lot of that kind of thing. And it's, again, I'm not saying it's awful or the worst thing. It's just when there was a lot of that in the film. And so it just made, I don't know, it all feel a little bit mishy-mashy. And the other thing too is, along with Finn, is I also felt Carrie Coon was like, oh yeah, she's in this movie too, which, yeah, I love Carrie Coon. I think she's great. And she was, I liked her a lot in the first one. I thought she was really funny, and she had I loved her mom attitude in this, and in this too, when she's doing it, like that scene when she's like, how old are you now? You're an adult? And she's just like on her phone. I don't know. It's just like this, like, she's kind of a, like an asshole mom, but like you still kind of like her. But she's just like not in it. I wanted more of it. Like Paul Rudd had more of the emotional stuff because of his relationship with Phoebe. And that's good. I like that. But I wanted maybe, I don't know, a little bit more from these characters I do like, even if the rest of the characters I maybe like too, but it was just a lot of it.
Yeah,
I think Patton Oswalt's in there too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh yeah, that guy's in there. I forgot about that guy. I forgot about this guy.
Yeah, I think when you have a crowded movie like that, it makes less room for the characters that we do like and we want to see some kind of growth or arc or payoff. And we just don't get that as much as we'd want because we're so overcrowded with all these characters. And then we got to build lore and we got to tell some kind of story and give us, you know, shoot a lot of proton packs.
Mm-hmm. You got to do that stuff. You gotta make...
Which they did do. They checked that box.
You got to make proton packs that are red so you can sell the toys for those this time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Also, the protein or the proton packs that needed brass. So,
what?
So they needed brass, and then they looked to the fireman poles, like
they just melted it.
But then there were fire. They were still there.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. They like cut. They cut the bottom of one of them. They cut off a bunch of it, but then they definitely slid down them later. So I don't. How they did that.
I was like, did I miss something or did they not do that plan and they just didn't tell us? I don't know. Not super important, but it was like a significant thing. Like, oh, we're going to use this.
I'm just going to.
And I thought it was going to come up again.
I'm just going to chalk that up to a continuity error and leave it be. It's fine. I didn't see it, so I'm going to pretend it did not happen.
Sure. Yeah. Not major or anything, but it was just weird. Also, I mean, I'm kind of going into silly. I don't want to say nitpicky, but like silly territory. But like, okay, so the demon god, whatever, horn man, he becomes free in the middle of New York. So he then travels 5 miles off to sea so that he could then attack the beach and move back into New York. What's he doing?
Wait, was he out there? I thought it was just the ghost ice that was encroaching all around the island, but. I don't know. That sentence sounded stupid.
I don't know. Maybe that's what...
I actually was confused about this. Maybe you guys can help me out. So, like, before he's freed from the orb thing, there's ice, like, traveling down the streets. Like, it's traveling.
Yeah.
But how... Yeah. I don't understand, like, who... What is that? And I remember before, like, the melody, there's a ghost, like, talking to her. Like, she's talking to herself, but she's talking to, a presence. She's like, yeah, I know. Do we have to use her? Like, can't we?
Yeah.
But like, who's she talking to? Because the ghost inside the orb.
Oh yeah.
Yep. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, like things like that. That felt like, even if the stuff, the more important stuff in terms of, like, the characters and stuff like that, I feel like these elements still would kind of like, what's going on? Yeah. Not that I want it to make sense in a, you know, realistic way, but even in a silly Ghostbuster movie way, it's still just like, wait, what? I don't know about this. The Melody character also, like, she's like, I haven't moved on. I don't know how to. I have to, but... So,
but she'd never.
But it wasn't a character thing. It wasn't a character thing that she needed to move on. She just needed to be there at the right time to light a match for Kumail.
Oh, no. What, I think the fact that
I didn't get that.
No, my interpretation of that was that matchbook was her, like, dwelling on the fire, and the fire was her angst. That was the, you know, the thing that was tethering her, is that she's still grappling with and dealing with the. In processing how she died and what happened to her family and whatnot. And I think by using the last match and getting rid of the matchbook, that was kind of a symbolic, okay, I've done something good. I have created purpose for myself, and symbolically I have used the last of this little remnant of my trauma to create good, and now I can get over it and I can move on. And that was my interpretation. It seemed pretty clear to me.
I agree with that, except that she makes a point of early when she talking to Phoebe about it, of trying to light the match, and it's not lighting. So it's like she has been trying to do that.
Yeah.
Already.
I don't know. I don't think it's supposed to, I don't read it as like a, you know, an A plus B equals C thing. I don't read it as like a, you know, these are hard and fast laws of the Ghostbusters spiritual universe. It just kind of seems like a character beat to me. I don't know. It made sense to me. It no, felt
I think that's a good explanation. I buy that. That's yeah. Well, it's a perfect movie then. That actually resolved all.
Yeah, that's
actually
it.
One note I was also maybe not confused by, but well, maybe. So the big bad, the big horn bad man, is so his plan was to get the ghost girl to convince Phoebe to go to the lab.
So he needs a human to recite the incantation. And no human knows the incantation. He does, but he's a ghost monster, and Melody is a ghost, and they can't do it. So they need to be able to take over Phoebe as an apparition so that they can then control her body. That is my understanding of the logic that they were establishing.
So that means the ghost man knew that humans had invented a machine that would rip the souls from human beings and make them into incorporeal form so then he can control them?
Yes, because he's a ghost man with powers.
Okay. Good thing humans invented that.
Yeah, but maybe he knew that
it worked out for him.
You know, it's fine. It's fine. No, I get the sense that there were definitely some plot elements shuffled around and some rewrites that happened, and I think that goes to what you were saying, Sean, is that there's a lot of pieces that feel messy or disorganized or don't really lead anywhere, and that, you know, as I was mentioning to you, Ryan, on the way out, the plot with the mayor is one of the things I really dislike about the movie because, been there, done that, but also
it doesn't result
in anything. It never feels like a real threat. Just like, okay, this is happening again.
I was just gonna, it strains credibility and makes the other characters feel stupid and less likable. They're not taking the mayor's side, but they just like acquiesce. Like, did no one else see a stone lion about to kill this little girl, and now she's being punished for not being killed?
Right.
And everyone's just like, "Well, you should have listened to us. Now look, it's your fault that it's like, what are you talking about? A giant stone lion was about to kill her and potentially other people."
Right.
Yeah, it's that trope in movies that I really hate, Matt. I know you hate it too. Where the character doesn't just say the most logical thing to, like, here's what happened.
Yep.
And it's a perfectly rational explanation. Like, yeah, a lion just jumped out and tried to kill her. Like, what do you, I think that's perfectly acceptable. Well, and then also at the end of the movie, that lion's back there again. Had they repaired the lion?
I guess they repaired the lion. Just made another one. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page. I'm always looking at the Wikipedia pages for these movies, and the poster has a giant version of the lion front and center. It's weird. But yeah, that's to that same scene where the mayor's like, you did this, and then you did that, and then let's not forget the debacle with the Statue of Liberty. And I think I said out loud in the theater, I'm like, debacle? What do you mean? They saved the city. Everybody saw it. All these times there were thousands of witnesses. It's New York. Like, how are you going to really try to spin that they caused this? They're not... I don't know. It's very frustrating, and I wish that entire story was just cut out and we got rid of that screen time and used it for other things, because it's tired, and I hate it, and I don't want to see that character ever again.
Yeah, and it didn't add anything. I think all of the stuff with Phoebe's character was already established without that element anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, that arc would have still made sense with her, you know, being too young. I mean, it is, I will say that one thing that kind of reminds me of the original is that, you know, he's the bad guy and that he's the one of the antagonists, or, you know, of,
yeah, you know, sure,
but he's like an EPA, he's the EPA rep, which in general, like, I mean, I don't know. In general, I think of the EPA as something that's good,
right?
that in real life, that's a good thing, that we have regulations and that, you know, corporations aren't just like dropping nuclear bombs everywhere or whatever, right? But in the movie, in the context of the movie, he's the bad guy, right? And in this case, it's kind of a similar thing where it's like, yes, she should not be working. Child labor laws are real and they're there for a reason and they're good. And like, and so he's representing that in a bad way, in the same way he's representing the EPA in a bad way. So it reminded me in the first one, in that weird kind of twisted film logic where you're like, Oh yeah, he's the bad guy, but he's probably actually like he's right. They shouldn't be making her work.
Yeah, but you know what they could have done? Hey, let's bring that mom character and give her some more something to do. Maybe during that first ghost hunt, Phoebe gets minorly injured. And the mom kicks into mom mode and says, I don't want you ghostbusting no more. Not at least until you're 18, and then you can make your own decisions, but I'm your mother and I'm your guardian and I can't let you get hurt. I'm not gonna my father, you know, gave his life because of this cause. I'm not gonna see you do the same thing, you know, blah 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Create some tension with her and Phoebe, gives Phoebe more ammo to want to run away and be friends with the ghost girl. Problem solved.
Yeah, I agree. It would have been over. I think all those kind of connections could have been tighter and made more, you know, succinctly. I think also too, like you were talking in the summary, where she wants to be a ghost for 2 minutes,
mm-hmm.
but it's never established, like, why does she want to do this all of a sudden? Well, maybe if they had set up earlier that they wanted to touch and they couldn't or something, but that wasn't really set up in any way.
I think it was, but I don't remember it being significant. Like that,
if it was, I don't remember it at all. Yeah, then it wasn't significant for any of us to remember, because I certainly didn't. I mean, specifically, if that is really why she wanted to be a ghost, I mean, even that was vague. Is that why she wanted to be a ghost? I don't know why she did want to be a ghost. But
Phoebe?
Which, yeah.
Because she wanted to touch her friend.
Sean was saying that he doesn't remember her
establishing that. And I'm saying I think I do remember that. But...
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I guess I misunderstood what you're saying. Yeah, no, she does. But what doesn't make sense is that they do establish that Melody can touch corporeal objects. So I don't understand what the deal is.
Right.
I mean, maybe that's the confusion. Maybe it needed to be more clear or something. I just like it when she wanted to be a ghost, I was just like, I'm not really understanding the motivation here. I think on a larger character thing, it's a cool thing, a cool beat. And maybe I wish they developed more of that. She has more in common with the dead and she doesn't have any friends, or she can't connect with her family. And yeah, obviously that on a thematic level, that's good. I like that. But it didn't really translate to me in the moment, in the scene of like, wait, why is she just like, I wanted a little bit more of a stronger motivation. Maybe. I don't know.
Okay. Well, yeah.
But to that point also, so what was, how was her character resolved? Because I remember thinking at the end, like, okay, they shot the big ghost, and then he went away. But, how did it resolve her character? Like,
because what? Phoebe is the one who came up with the solution on how to beat him with the brass. And
I just mean in terms of, like, her wanting to be treated as an adult, but also, like, she is not an adult.
I think it was just as simple as Phoebe saved the day. She came up with an idea that the adults couldn't. She proved that she does have value and she's not a kid and she should be taken seriously. I don't think it was much deeper than that. And I think also it doesn't need to be. You know, it's Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I think...
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's not really her arc then. She didn't really learn anything, right?
No, she didn't. We didn't either. But so in the movie, after the second time Phoebe gets busted for busting,
mm-hmm.
that is ghost busting, I mean, by the mayor, he's like, oh, I'm angry at you and I'm gonna try you as an adult, which I think that was a joke, right?
It
was supposed to be a joke.
I don't know.
Right, so he's getting them in trouble for her being underage, but then we'll be trying her as adult, right? That's a paradox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like I said, get rid of the mayor and everything related to him and just throw it in the garbage and we move on with our lives. This is causing problems. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we mentioned briefly, but it wasn't like completely unfunny, but it definitely wasn't as I did think Afterlife was actually funnier. The parts that I liked of Afterlife, I remember laughing more. It wasn't so bad that it was like cringy or anything in this one. It's just like, I think I laughed out loud once, and it was when Paul Rudd was just like reciting the words to Ghostbusters to Carrie Coon.
There was a few other laugh out loud moments for me, but I would agree with you. I think that probably this is maybe the least funny of the series, and I'm even counting Lady Ghostbusters as well.
I agree with you.
But I also just, I had a lot more fun with this one compared to the previous one. This one felt like more straight, like, action type of movie, adventure action movie, less a comedy, and Ghostbusters really needs to bring the comedy, and that, I think that's where this movie's the weakest.
There was like one funny moment besides like the Paul Rudd reciting the lyrics was, and I don't know if this is intentional, but me and Matt, we both laughed, was when Kumail finally, or Nadim, finally starts to firebend, but he bends the proton beam stream.
Yeah.
And then magically, I love that scene too, because they're like upstairs in like the kitchen or something. And it's just like two of them, but then like every cut, like two more people show up in the scene, and they're just like magically apparating. It's great if you watch the edit. Like, but anyway, one of those times, Finn appears behind him, or Trevor, whatever, and goes, "You're doing it!" There's no way that was intentionally like a serious line.
I think for both of us, that was the hardest laugh, and nobody else was laughing.
Yeah, so it's probably unintentional, but it was really funny.
Fun moment for us, yeah.
Yeah,
you know what? Actually, I think that this movie needed that would have, I don't know if it would have solved everything per se, but it needed a good montage. That's what because where it was the middle of this movie just felt like really busy of and sometimes in a good way because it felt like they each had their own little quest they were doing, which is can work, but like we've been saying, I feel like there's just so much it was hard to focus. But I think a montage might have actually gone a long way. Of like just like quickly conveying a lot of this information without eating up a lot of screen time, and it feels like we've had these characters interact more and establish more, and I don't know, like plus montages are fun, like
it makes that middle part of the movie, which for me was an hour and a half, it just like really really drag because it's you know. It's an action adventure comedy movie. Like it should feel fairly fast paced. Like things are moving along, and it was a bit of a slog for me in the middle of the movie. And I mean, for a movie called Ghostbusters, literally two ghosts got busted. That was it. One in the very very intro, and then the bad guy at the end. And that's it. Like, where's the ghost busting?
Yeah, did they not get Slimer?
They never got Slimer.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is his whole deal. He's a wily guy. He always gets away.
I mean, that's true. I'll let him get away.
He gets to live another day to eat as many hot dogs as he wants. And you know what? I got to respect that.
Yeah, he didn't eat enough hot dogs in this movie, though.
But we know he's gonna. We know he's gonna.
The promise of more hot dogs will always keep me coming back.
He's a true New Yorker, that Slimer.
Yeah. Speaking of New York, I was a little disappointed that they had to default back to... like just nostalgia. Well, it all takes place in New York. We gotta go back. At least the previous one, it was original in the idea that it was like, oh hey, we're in
somewhere else,
Oklahoma. Yeah. This is cool. Or I think it was
Oklahoma. I mean, okay, but counterpoint: the Ghostbusters headquarters is in New York, and also the idea that they're in Oklahoma in the previous one was compounded with the idea that okay, one of these kids is in Stranger Things, and they're obviously just trying to do Stranger Things but with Ghostbusters. Because there was that episode of Stranger Things where the kids were dressed as Ghostbusters, and somebody at Sony said, hey, that kid, he looks good in the outfit. Let's do Stranger Things, but Ghostbusters. I don't know. I was just feeling too cynical about that whole concept in the previous movie to really enjoy the fact that it was a different setting. But, you know, that's maybe just me being crotchety.
Well, I mean, it could have been another setting entirely. I mean, I didn't mind the New York stuff. It felt fine, but I also think they are limiting themselves if they just constantly are always in New York. There's only ghosts in New York. Maybe that's just part of the world. And the one in Oklahoma that one time. Otherwise, no ghosts anywhere else.
I don't know if we did or not. Honestly, I meant to listen to our episode about the previous Ghostbusters movie, but then I forgot. And I don't remember what I said in that episode, so I can't be held accountable for any of it. But I think we talked about the concept of the Ghostbusters should be setting up other Ghostbusters franchises, because the first movie is at its core about a bunch of guys who are trying to start a business. Like that's what it's about, right. And they're running into problems with the EPA and the city and red tape and bureaucracy, and it's funny because it's about a ghost extermination company. I think that a natural place to take that is franchising, right? What does that look like? Yeah. How do you maintain the quality of the product when you have branches in five different cities? You know, that would be fun, and I think that would solve the problem of, well, we could have stuff in New York because that's where Ghostbusters headquarters is, but we could also explore some different locations. Maybe because all these monsters are all European and you know, Middle Eastern gods and deities. Maybe we can get some international. There's a plot where somebody's got to go overseas for something, go raid a tomb, something like that. You know, there's possibilities there. Yeah, I think they should go in that direction.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. I was thinking maybe another direction they could go is, you know, since everyone does know about ghosts across the world, the military starts weaponizing the ghosts. And then what they do is they'll shoot a laser at their target, and then the ghost will attack that target.
I think he might be onto something here.
Perfect.
And I think...
Yeah. And they could do it in, like, a mansion. They could be, like, a haunted mansion.
I like that.
I think the movie after that, the Ghostbusters should battle a volcano.
That's pretty good.
And that's
and
the
what
finale.
If they... yeah. They just start shooting their proton packs at an exploding volcano. Are we helping?
Slimer shows up for a second. And then, hey, and then he leaves. That's what the people want.
Yep.
Alright, well.
It was kind of... I guess they did this in the first one, too. Or in the 2022 one or whatever. But the actual real-life commercials and promotions... That was just commercials for the Ghostbusters in the 80s.
Yeah, that was fun. Oh, I did like that. Especially when they had the music video.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I felt like that could have not worked, but actually I thought that was kind of cute.
And then that way, canonically, it makes sense for, you know, Paul Rudd to be knowledgeable of the lyrics.
Yes, it's perfect. It's great. I love that. That means that they all got good together job. In universe and learns that little dance, that choreography, and had a film shoot for the music video. And I want that story. I want to know how the Ghostbusters were behaving on the day of the film shoot, particularly Bill Murray. Oh, man. give us an animated short film about that. That's what I want.
It could be a real Ghostbusters, like...
Yes!
Behind the scenes.
Yes. Yeah. Behind the music.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
reboot
that's it.
The real Ghostbusters.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're rebooting the live action stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess I'm a little bummed it's not doing so well. I don't know if it's doing well, but the reviews are so poor because I don't think it deserves those poor reviews. And I could, and like you said, I am more interested in seeing another one or this becoming a more franchisey thing than I have been in the past. I don't need that. I'm fine if they don't. But, you know, I'm more open to that now than I have been. I don't know. Not that I care. Who cares? Who cares if I'm open to a franchise? But yeah, if it's like these kind of monster of the week kind of things, and they've established plenty of characters that they could draw from, so I could see it being a fun recurring.
I actually would be okay with like a TV show with something about that. Like, I mean, special effects are there. It's, you know, it just do a monster of the week. You get to build these kind of characters that are quirky and fun, and it doesn't have to take things too seriously. And yeah, I'd watch that.
I'd be fine. I'd be fine with that. No, that would be good. Yeah, that would be good. That's a good direction. I mean, one way or the other. You know, this movie's not financially performing that well. It's probably not going to break even. That being said, it's too recognizable of an IP for Sony to ever just say, we're not going to do this anymore. Especially because Sony is, you know, well, Disney owns all the good IPs nowadays. So, the other studios...
What are you talking about? Sony has Kraven, Morbius,
Madam Web.
So everybody has to hang on to their scraps. That's basically what's happening.
Yeah.
Sony's got to hang on to Ghostbusters. So at some point they're going to do something else, and I hope it's sooner than later because I do want to see more of this corner of the Ghostbusters universe. Do it while you can before all the other Ghostbuster OG Ghostbusters die. which is going to be any minute now.
You have them held hostage in your apartment right now, actually. Bill Murray has to act his way out of this one.
Here we are in my creepy apartment. All right. Well.
Well, I mean, last question, guys. What do you think? Will the world end in fire or ice?
It's going to end in global warming.
So just warm in between.
It's going to end in. It's going to end in.
End in lukewarm. It's going to
end in volcano. All right. So
going to set off.
Yeah,
the
What do we? All right. So would we recommend this film? Yes or no? Sean, would you recommend Ghostbusters Frozen Empire?
I would not recommend going to the movies to pay for it. I'd recommend waiting until it's streaming. But once it's streaming, I'd say, hey, yeah, give it a watch. You'll probably get some enjoyment out of it.
Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah, I cannot advocate for paying for the movie ticket. But if you have the movie pass thing, sure. Yes. Yeah. If it's on streaming, yes, sure.
Well, I have the movie pass thing. And I would say, if you've seen all the other Ghostbusters movies, then yeah, go see this one. Pass or not, streaming or not, I would recommend it. If you're already in for it, if you haven't seen the Ghostbusters movie, don't watch this one first. That'd be crazy.
Well, I bet there are. I mean, that they definitely feel like they're aiming for a wider demographic. I'm talking about all the different characters. I don't think that is purely just like, well, we write all these characters for no reason. I think there's probably some element where it's like, okay, we have the kids, we have the adults, we have the old school fans, we have this, like, I do think there's a certain element where they're trying to appeal to a very, very wide
Well, you know what, Sean, I would recommend this movie, paid for or not. Okay. And part of the reason is there's just nothing out, and this is a good enough time at the movies, whether you're into Ghostbusters or not. If you go into the movies and you try to watch something right now, yeah, you're probably not going to do better than this at the moment, unless you're, well, I guess Dune's out, but nah.
If you're a family,
you got kids, middle schoolers maybe, and you just need something to see this weekend, this is probably your best bet. And I would say, yeah, I recommend it.
I'd agree.
Kids will like it. Parents will like it enough. Go check it out. Why not?
Except for podcasts. Everyone hates podcasts.
He would just change his name or his face. All right. Okay. Well, that's our thoughts on the film Ghostbusters, the Frozen Kingdom.
Oh, also, I didn't get that it was called Frozen Empire because it's the Empire State, New York City, until embarrassingly
recently. I just learned that now. I forgot that I wanted to talk about how much I hate that title, but now I can't, because
I also don't like that title, but when I learned that, it did make it
yes,
a little
that's
bit.
Exactly how I'm feeling right now. You just witnessed that. We go through that whole range of emotions.
I'm glad we're here.
I know. What a monumental. Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. All right. Well, let's check our inbox. There's nothing.
Oh.
So if any of y'all are still listening, hey, we should actually post the link to this episode this time. I've been saying that, but I also haven't been doing it. We should probably advertise that we're doing this again. And if you are here listening to us say that, we appreciate it. Thank you for hanging in there.
Yes.
All right. And yeah, I don't have anything else to say about this. Is there stuff coming up? Are there things coming up? I don't really know.
Maybe. Stay tuned. We might have an episode out sooner than later, maybe. But what else? I mean, Chewie, I know you're not the biggest fan, but maybe there. I know, mainly because there's not much else coming out. But there's the new Godzilla Kong thing. Godzilla X Kong.
Is that what it's called?
Okay.
Yeah, it's also an Empire movie.
Wow. Maybe it takes place in New York.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they build a new New York underground in the inner globe where King Kong lives.
Okay. Or a new one on top of it, like Futurama.
Oh, yeah, even better. Anyways, that movie is coming out soon. So maybe, I don't know. I'm just saying there's not a lot out right now. So that might be a contender.
All right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Ryan, who are you going to call?
Madam Web.
Sean, who are you going to call?
I'm going to call myself. Okay. I save myself. I don't need no one.
All right. I'm gonna call this the end of the episode. Good night, everybody. All right.
This has been
After the Credits,
a Yum Chunks podcast.
Yum Chunks.
Bustin' certainly made us feel good.